everyone. We are back. You're listening to Positive Business, and I'm Patricia Raskin, right here on AM 790 with my great co-host, Tuni Shartner, who is president of TRS Marketing Strategies right here in Rhode Island. And we have our guest coming up next. But before we do, we kept Ryan just for another minute because he has a shout-out.
Yes, I'd just like to say happy birthday to my beautiful wife, Lori. I love you. Thank you for everything you've done, and I didn't forget about it. Just didn't come up in conversation, but I love you. Happy birthday, and I'll see you soon.
All right. It's positive business and love, right?
It's awesome.
Okay, thanks so much. And we're talking about creating your best life, and part of it is showing love to those people we love.
Absolutely.
All right. Our guest on the phone with us today is Caroline Miller, and it's Caroline Adams Miller. And she is a professional coach and happiness expert. She's the author of the best-selling book, Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. And this groundbreaking book is the first to explain how the new science of positive psychology intersects with goal-setting research to help people set and achieve their goals. Welcome, Caroline.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. All right, tell us about how this intersects with positive psychology and really the message of your book.
Okay, well, I wrote the book for a few reasons. The simplest reason I can tell you is that when I, as a coach, but also as a competitive athlete, and my great-uncles were Olympic gold and silver medalists, so I've always brought up,
wow,
try to be the best. You know, it's really... Yeah, that was the family ethic, but that's also who I am as a person. So I was very well read on goal literature. And I think I probably owned every book. However, when I got to the University of Pennsylvania in 2005, I was in the first class that Martin Seligman pulled together for this Master in Applied Positive Psychology, which is the science of happiness. While I was there, I was introduced to some really, to me, stunning research. The most important one was that three of the top researchers in the science and field of positive psychology, they reviewed every single piece of research, every kind, longitudinal, you know, qualitative, and so on and so forth. Anyway, hundreds of studies. They found very decisively that all success in life is preceded by being happy first.
Being happy first before you succeed.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Caroline, I'm going to ask a quick question. I think you're on a cell phone, and we're having a lot of trouble really grabbing every word that you say, and they're all important to everything you're saying. So I'm wondering if you can call us on a landline.
I think I can. I'm in someone's office, so let me call you back.
Okay. All right. In the meantime, we're going to talk about your book while you're doing that.
Great.
Okay.
Great.
So, Tuni, I think it's amazing. She's saying that happiness comes first.
I love that. And as we know, I've made a shift in my life in my 40s, and
You feel you get your goals easier when you're happier.
And positive. I think positive is the word I heard more than anything. And I was just having a conversation with my 6-year-old daughter today, talking about doing what you like in life versus doing what you think you should. Mm. And then my 11-year-old son chimed in, and we had this great conversation, which I thought was very timely, that my daughter and I were talking about how we both work hard. And I said, it's so much easier when you love what you do. And she was saying, well, I love to do dishes and I love to do this. And it's just, I think I learned today, ironically, which I know, the importance of promoting positivity in work, right?
Yeah, very important. But I want to, when Caroline calls us back, I really want to talk about this concept of being happy to achieve your goals. Because there are a lot of people who do achieve their goals. They're not necessarily happy.
Right.
They're driven.
Right. That's a good question.
So,
yeah.
I think that is really an important piece here. And, you know, she really talks about one of her points is getting a grit, making a grit book to find daily inspirational newspaper or internet stories about someone whose grittiness impresses you and can be a role model.
I make a point every day to read something, you know, at least one thing, but usually it's 4, 5, or 10 in my industry. And usually I follow people who are positive. So there's no irony that that's what she's saying, positive psychology. So I try to increase my awareness in my industry, but I follow leaders who are positive, whether it's Richard Branson or Sherry Harrison. I'm drawn to people who have a positive energy about them, who are also ironically successful. So,
well, I think that breeds the success too.
It's inspiring.
Yeah. And like attract like.
Right. And I try, even on my hardest days as I was rebuilding my life and career in my 40s, I just tried to do something every day that I could measure as a step forward. So I think that's an example of positive. Maybe she could give us some examples.
Yeah. Oh, good. Are you back with us, Caroline?
I am.
Oh, much better. Much better.
We can hear you now.
Much better. We actually got a couple of texts saying, you know, it was hard to hear you, and we were having trouble, and we want to hear all these precious words you have to tell us.
So, oh, great. Can I repeat what I answered before? Because I thought it was kind of pivotal in terms of why am I talking about this and how is it connected.
Go ahead, because I just want to tell you, after you say that, my question to you is going to be why happiness is really so important before reaching your goals. That's something I want to know. So go ahead.
Okay, so what I was saying is I wrote Creating Your Best Life simply because there were no evidence-based books on the market. When I started at Penn 2005 for this degree in happiness, I was already kind of a goals expert for a variety of other reasons, my line of work for one. But then I started to look a little bit more critically at the books in the bookstores, and what I found was nobody had written a book that had any research or footnotes in it. So basically, every goal-setting book until mine came out in 2009 was a bunch of anecdotes, some of which I found were urban legends, many of them being passed off as research. So I then decided to combine it, and I think I'm the first one to do this, with the science of happiness. And that why is that is because the finding that turned my life upside down, my world, and caused the book was hundreds and hundreds of pieces of research proving that all success in life is preceded by being happy first.
But wait a minute, Caroline. But there are people who aren't happy and are successful.
Well, I think we'd have to take that on a case-by-case basis, to be honest with you, because that's kind of general. And I understand what you're saying, but the truth of the matter is success is relative. I think there are different kinds of success and different prices for success. But generally, what's found is that the quality of your relationships is higher when you're in a flourishing place. The same is true for peer ratings, for, you know, even income. I mean, it's across the board, better health. So, I mean, this is just an incontrovertible part of the field, which is why it's so exciting, because it is evidence-based, and I'm not telling you just my opinion. People who are in an emotionally flourishing place, and that's basically a 7 or an 8 on a scale from 1 to 10, these are the people for whom life is, you know, they generally are more optimistic, they're more self-confident, they have greater self-efficacy, and for the most part, they're extroverted or they know how to turn on extroversion when they need it. And so the goal-setting piece when it comes to that is people who are confident tend to set goals and believe they can accomplish them, and that's a huge part of living a high-quality life. Most people do not live that way.
I'm thinking as you're talking about how can we help people kind of switch over into that kind of frame of positivity. That maybe
there's a lot of ways to do it. You know, people generally, for the most part, can do some self-report, and they can basically get it right when they say they're somewhere around a 5 or a 6. But you have to start with some self-awareness, and sometimes other people are good at telling you where you are, and it's accurate too. But there are about 7 or 8 things that the research is pretty clear adds well-being to your life. One of them is exercise. Another one is the practice of gratitude. Another one is being altruistic, being a giving person. Another one is music, journaling. And then the one that just seems to be amassing so much research, it's just everyone should know it, is meditation. Meditation tends to rewire your brain in such a way that you connect with people differently, you're not hijacked by your emotions, and you tend to make better decisions. So those are just a few things. I teach them, they're in my book, where, you know, if you begin to introduce those into your life, then you are preparing yourself to be successful. You want to start that way.
I want to ask you what you learned and how you've incorporated what you learned from your family, where you said there were lots of athletes, lots of high performers. How does that tie into the book?
Okay. One of the things I learned, my first book was 1988, called My Name is Caroline. I was the first person to survive bulimia and write about it. And one of the things that I discovered was that growing up in Washington, D.C., I had been pursuing all the wrong goals. Those are called extrinsic goals.
So I was at Harvard, and then my eating disorder was getting worse and worse. And I bottomed out, and I should have been happy, right? I was a, you know, good-looking, I was a swimmer, I was a high achiever, I'm at Harvard, you know, what's wrong with this picture? What was wrong with the picture was that those were not really the goals that I valued. Those were the goals other people were setting for me. And they didn't bring me any lasting pleasure because they're kind of look-at-me goals. And the research shows that you have to learn how to set intrinsic goals, you know, the goals that you set for yourself. So I became very interested in the field of goal setting because of my eating disorder. It's like, how could I almost kill myself? And then this price of happiness, what was I driving for? Because the thin body didn't make me happy. Harvard didn't make me happy. Getting married didn't make me happy. So what's the answer? And this is an age-old question. A lot of people really are searching for what is happiness. And it tends to come down to having a meaningful life, being engaged in what you do, having achievement, having positive relationships. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. The quality of your relationships really dictates the quality of your life. And then positive moments.
What advice, how would you apply this to business, as this show is positive business? What advice would you give for people in the workplace in terms of goal setting and happiness?
Well, gosh, I speak to a lot of financial audiences. My book is actually used in a lot of companies for the simple reason that a flourishing workplace is a workplace that makes money. And that's been shown repeatedly now. If you look at the Ross School of Business, they've got a lot of research on what's called positive organizational scholarship. And if you create a flourishing workplace where, for example, the mathematical ratio, you're at 3 positives to 1 negative, you have employees who are more engaged, less depressed, more likely to show up, fewer sick days, but also they're more creative, they brainstorm more, they support each other, and they have better bottom line results. Mm-hmm. So the phrase in the positive psychology world is, companies that do good do well.
I love that, and that ties into our first two guests as well.
Yes, it really does. It really does. All right, we have Tom, I think we have about another minute. And then we're going to come back and talk to you for a few more minutes after this. Our timing is a little different today, and we have on all these wonderful people. Caroline, so what would be your advice? People are listening to this, and they know they need to change something about the way they're thinking in terms of happiness and goal setting. What would be a good place to start?
I think the first thing people should do is sit down, get quiet, and say, am I living my best life? And where do I want to be in 5 years? There's an exercise that all my clients do that's on my website. You can download it. And it's been proven to do a couple things, increase happiness, but also clarify the roadmap that you're living. And it's called Best Possible Future Self. And what you want to do is spin yourself into the future and get a sense of where do I want to be? Who do I want to be living around? What is my purpose in life? And purpose is very important. But people don't slow themselves down long enough to even do an exercise like this. When you do it for 3 days in a row for 20 minutes, what you discover is that the themes of people's lives emerge. The goals, both short-term and long-term, that they need to begin to set, they also emerge. You also have goals in conflict clarified. A lot of people don't even know they have goals in conflict. Mm. And you're also readier to commit to steps that will lead you forward. Now, people who are trained in goal-setting theory, as I am, we are trained to ask a lot of questions that clarify this good goals versus bad goals. But here's the simple kind of barometer for me. It's so what? If you achieve that goal, so what? How is your life better? How is the world better? How is society informed by you achieving that goal? Because long-term, things do not bring you happiness. What brings you happiness is being connected to others, being masterful over things, and having a meaningful life. Having a reason to wake up in the morning, as the Japanese call it, ikigai. And translated, what that means is that which I wake up for. And so that's where you start.
What would you say to people who are listening to this who are in jobs and they're not happy?
Oh, gosh. The first, I mean, I have a lot of questions I'd ask, but the first one is, why are you doing this job? Is this your calling? Would you consider this to be the thing that when you wake up in the morning, you know that you're advancing the ball down the field in some way, where you're creative, you're engaged, and also the world's a better place, too.
All right, but what if somebody answers you and says, no, I'd love to be there, but I'm not. I have to make a living, and this is a good living, and I'm supporting a family, and so this is where I need to be now, even though I don't like it.
There's a lot of good answers to that, and one of them is, can you take a look at the things that you do and associate the things that are important to you, your values? Maybe it's making money to make sure your children go to good schools. In many ways, you can begin to see it as less of a drudgery job and more of what calls to you. And there's wonderful research called Work as a Calling, where they studied orderlies in hospitals. You know, a very kind of dreary, low-end job. And what they found is that there were orderlies in New York hospitals who felt that the job they did was the most important job in the hospital because they made patients' lives easier and better. They would go in, they'd straighten pictures, they would rearrange blankets, and they found that their lives were the most meaningful jobs that you could possibly have. Firefighters feel that way. So in many ways, it's does this job match what you can give to the world? And is this your calling? And is it, you know, pleasant is nice too, but I think people are happiest when they're challenged and they're engaged, their strengths are being used, and they have a sense of what is this all about? Where is it going? So that's, you know, that's just a few ways that people begin to challenge themselves. Another one is some workplaces are simply too toxic. This has been well studied and well covered. Again, you go back to this mathematical ratio. The best companies and even relationships have 3 positives to 1 negative. I have a lot of clients start a scorecard to just basically ask themselves, you know, if I thin slice this day, what's it like? It's also been found, and this to me is the most interesting part, that in companies, when consultants come in and they map out what's called positive energy networks, they find that there are hubs in companies where there's one person, and there's several of them in companies, sometimes one, sometimes more. They're called positive energizers. And those are the people who make other people feel motivated, positive about what they do, encourage them. Your success in that company is directly correlated with how close you are to that person.
That's above and beyond where you are in the information network
or the influence network.
All right.
So it's the people you work with.
And that's also in your book, yes?
Yes. Well, actually, that's newer research. It wasn't in there, but... you know, I don't know. It'll be in another book. But the positive energizer research, people like to go look for the hard evidence, which I do. Go to the University of Michigan's business school page, the Ross School of Business. You will find all of that research on positive energizers right there.
Can I just ask quick, the grit scale test that's in the book, right?
Okay. I think I'm the only person who's actually written about grit, or at least the first one. Angela Duckworth and Marty Seligman began studying the quality that set apart, you know, good from great. And they studied composers and chess players and athletes and pretty much everyone who had risen to elite status in their field. And what they found is that the number one predictor of succeeding at long-term goals that require passion and perseverance is this quality of grit, where you simply do not quit in life. We do have a nation of quitters who have grown up with instant communication. Everyone was told they were a winner. That was the self-esteem movement, which really only produced narcissists and sociopaths. So we have a generation of people. It's the me generation. Even the songs that have been written during that period, the most common words are I, me, and my. And so you really have to develop this quality where you're not quitting, because the happiest people do a couple things. One is they set hard goals out of their comfort zones. Another thing is that they never quit. And yet, I think that parents don't always role model hanging in there when it's tough to their children. So I think everyone has to take a look at where they are. Now, the grit scale is in my book. You can take a look at it. It's also on the Positive Psychology webpage at the University of Pennsylvania.
And people can find out where they are on the grit scale.
Yes, they can, and it's the leading predictor of who drops out at West Point now.
Far beyond grades, scores. All right, folks.
All right.
We're going to have to close, Caroline. We'll have to have you come back. You're terrific. All right. Take the grit scale test. Go to Caroline's book, Creating Your Best Life, and find out if you have the grit to really make your life work and to really understand that it's not just about goals and it's not just about optimism and perseverance and passion, but it's also really about grit. So thanks so much for being on, Caroline. How can people find you?
Oh, I'm very findable. www.carolinemiller.com is
right.
My main site. And my next book's out in a few weeks, positivelycaroline.com.
All right, and we'll definitely have you come back. Stay on the line for a minute, Caroline.
Okay,
folks, next up is William Bouffard, and his book is Putting Cologne on the Rickshaw, A Guide to Dysfunctional Management and the Evil Workplace Environments They Create and What You Can Do About It. Stay tuned, folks. You're listening to Positive Business. I'm Patricia Raskin, your host, with my great co-host today, Tuni Schartner from TRS Marketing Strategies. We'll be right back.